honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and another fascinating adventure today with 98-year-old Ed Bates, a veteran of both the Merchant Marine and the Navy in World War II. He ended up in a special naval intelligence unit called Op 20G in Washington, D.C., which is where he met his late wife, Frida, who ended up being quite a help to him in his law enforcement career as a county sheriff and coroner as well.
You know, when you talked about going into naval intelligence, you highlighted the stakes for you, that because it was a time of war, if you violated the secrecy, it could cost you your life. I think the statute of limitations should be up on a lot of that stuff. Can you give us some examples of some of the kind of information that you were privy to or some of the secret things you did?
Well, one of the things that I just got a letter from NSA, because I had to clear it with them first. They said, I can tell this story, but I can't change it in any respect. Can't give you too many details. I was in Hawaii when the Korean War broke out in the Navy. A young petty officer come running over to me and said, hey, I've got a Soviet radar station sending a DOL message. DOL to the Soviets, it's now Russian, but Soviets at that time, meant air alert, air alert, air alert. Now we had airplanes flying 12 miles out from Vladivostok, Russian. And we had, before then, the USS Pueblo, which was captured by the North Koreans. You captured all of our secret data, all of our secret stuff, and all of our men, which they furnished to the Soviets. Anyway, this guy is sending that, and he said, this Soviet operator is so scared that his Morse code is unintelligible, even though it was in Russian. He said, can you help me? So I ran over, picked up his earphones, tuned it in, and it was obvious that this man was scared to death. So one of our airplanes must be pretty close. They have shot down several of our planes. Chinese did too, with all of our people aboard. You don't hear much about that. But so pretty soon, a KGB, that's Russian secret police agent, came on that circuit. Sent him a signal to put a qualified operator on watch because they're trying to get radar on this American plane so they could shoot it down. So then this guy still tried to send. He couldn't. It was unintelligible. But I stayed with it. I got little parts of it. Then pretty soon somebody got on and sent the message in code. It's in cipher, just a series of numbers. Didn't mean anything, but I copied it. Then all of a sudden, he was gone. Another guy came in, sent the message in plain language. In other words, it broke the Russian code. Now, the National Security Agency spends billions of dollars trying to break the Russian codes. And this crazy guy broke it, trying to send it. So right away, I sent this information off to the National Security Agency. Then I got off duty. When I came back on duty that night, we had a message. Congratulations to Operator EB, that was me, and to the station. Of all of the intercept stations that the Army, Navy, Air Force, everybody has, you were the only station that copied this information that broke their code. It gave the exact data on all of their radar. Subsequently, I learned that a U.S. Air Force reconnaissance airplane on such a mission had disappeared. They've never found it to this day. Now, whether that was that one, don't know. But those kind of things happen.
Yeah, I'm always struck by, with all the stories I hear from guys like you, the stories of the things that actually happen sometimes pale in comparison to considering what could have happened.
Yeah, that's it. And maybe some that have happened that we don't know about.
Yeah.
Because Americans, unfortunately, my culture is pre-war. I'm thinking of magazines on Saturday Evening Post, painted by a man and his wife, and little children holding hands going to church, an officer talking to a young lad, both of them, the lad looking at the officer with admiration, and the officer with his arm around the young guy. All kinds of Girl Scouts saluting the American flag, things that indicated what a fine country it is. Maybe guys on United Farm Workers on a strike, that was okay, that's legal. Everything, showing American life. Nowadays, like I said, the officers aren't even going to stop if they're burning down the precinct. What's happened?
That's a big question, but I do think you've experienced at least one thing that maybe restored your hope for America, or a reminder that people do value your service. And you got to go on the honor flight to Washington, D.C. In fact, I believe you took a picture of your wife with you there. What do you remember about that experience, your honor flight?
Well, it was particularly meaningful to me because that, of course, Washington, D.C. is where I met my wife. One of the tours that they take you is to the Air Force, the Navy, the Marines, and so forth. As we were going up to the Air Force in a bus to look at their Air Force Memorial for World War II, there was a sign down on a road just as you started up, painted red and yellow marking, Marine Corps, and it said Henderson Hall. That's where my wife was stationed. And that's where I used to visit her. And so I had her picture and mine with me, so that every place we visited there, some of them she hadn't visited, of course, because they were after the war. Mm-hmm. But places we had gone together, the flag ceremony, when she was a corporal, part of her duties was guarding that area.
At Arlington, at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier?
Yeah, Arlington. Yeah, Henderson Hall was just right there at that same location. So they had to take turns doing that kind of duty with a detail of people, watching it when it wasn't being guarded. So anyway, I reminisced everything that we had seen and done there, because I was a typical young sailor, and I found out we'd go to a nice place to eat, and she wouldn't drink, and she didn't smoke, and she was a straight arrow. And then when I became sheriff, former sheriff had had a secretary, but I had no secretary. Frieda said, well, I'll come down and do it for you. So she typed my letters for me. And then I found out the detectives, they weren't sending in crime reports, which are required by the attorney general, so that they could determine what kind of crimes are occurring and where they're occurring. They weren't doing it. She worked for 6 years for free for detectives doing that for them. She was a real trooper.
I'm sure we could sit here for hours, and you've got lots of stories. But oh, yeah. I have a couple more questions for you. One, you know, have you ever thought, if I didn't drink that Aleutian solution and write that crazy letter, that I never would have met my wife?
I have thought about that, as a matter of fact. That's true. Yeah, because I wrote to the admiral in charge of all naval intelligence. His name was Zacharias, very famous guy. I don't know whether you ever saw it or somebody else might have seen it in between, but... And nobody ever said nothing to me, but there I was.
The Lord works in mysterious ways?
Indeed. In fact, he made me a good Christian. I used to think of a Christian as the old-fashioned thing. Now I lay me down to sleep, pray the Lord my soul to keep. And I was thinking of the Lord Jesus as a guy standing over me watching with a sword. And I was thinking, well, when the time comes that he's going after the devil, I want to be along his side with another sword. And I still want to be that way.
As you celebrate 98 years, when you think back over 98 years, is there something you'd say you're most thankful for or most proud of?
Well, probably the idea that this really truly was a case, as far as I'm concerned, a fight in a war again. Only it was a war instead of a war against a foreign enemy. I was convinced there's two kinds of people, good people and bad people. And when I was made a deputy sheriff, the only test that he gave me, I gave him my military record. He said, are you a good shot? I said, yeah, I shoot expert. Can you handle yourself in a fight? Yes, indeed. Do you know the difference between a good guy and a bad guy? Yes, I do. Okay, here he said, here's what I want you to do. Go after the bad guys, leave the good guys alone. So in 29 and a half years, I never gave a single citation to anybody. I've warned them. I've called the highway patrol to take drunk drivers in. They get an attaboy when they do that. In my case, if an officer did it, he had to go testify, and we weren't paid overtime, so I had to give him time off. I couldn't do that. So we turned everything like that over to the highway patrol. I wasn't going to go out and stop grandma because the baby threw a candy wrapper out. No, that's a good guy. It has to be done. There has to be people that do that. And many of the guys driving through stoplights and drunk and so, are bad guys. But my job was to go out and catch good guys, and it tickled the hell out of me to catch guys that were bad guys.
And one more, and then if there's anything you'd like to add, and I don't want to forget to say thank you. You know, thank you for serving our country and keeping us safe for so many years. Is there anything that you haven't done yet or that hasn't happened in 98 years that you're still kind of looking forward to or hoping for?
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting Jesus. My first thought was, Jesus, are you sure I'm supposed to be here? No, I've looked up every single thing I've ever done in my life as an adventure, and most of all of them turned out good. And so whatever happens from now on, it's an adventure, and I'm willing to live with that. I've always had a real good attitude about everything. Everything's going to be good. The only thing I'm adding now is where I said before there were good guys and bad guys, there are evil people. Evil. They're more concerned about themselves, their power, and the money. Greed is probably the single... When I was teaching criminology, I had to teach, you know, the reason people commit crime is because they've been overprotected by their mothers. They've been rejected by their fathers. They're victims of social, cultural, ethnic, economic, psychological, environmental, racial problems. Well, it's true that some of those factors do. But the truth of the matter is, the reason people commit crime is because there's a desire to commit crime, plus the opportunity to commit crime. So if you find somebody with a desire to commit crime and the opportunity, it's going to happen. It's divided by R, which is repression. So if you want to steal a watermelon from my watermelon field and I'm standing there with a shotgun loaded with rock salt, your desire factor goes way down. So, and on the desire factor, most of your desire to stay out of trouble comes from your home life. The problem we have today, I think, this is a personal thing, that all those other factors, of course, influence things. And we live in such a fast, rapid society. In my generation, even if you didn't have much to eat, the whole family sat down and we would talk. What happened to you in school today? Dad, what happened today at work? And everybody had something to say, and we all knew everything. We all... We're able to talk about it. Today, because of economics, both people have to work generally just to get by. That's not necessarily the best situation for children, but it's a fact of life. Then, of course, you get, as you see is happening in Harvard and Yale, you're getting college professors who were hippies during the 60s. And so what did they have written on the side of their van? God is dead. If it feels good, do it. Greed is good. Hell no, I won't go. Those people are now college professors teaching our youth. I've often thought the propaganda minister for Hitler said, if you tell a big enough lie often enough, people will believe it. And that's what they did. But he took people who were, they had a worse depression even than we did. He furnished them free radios that were only tuned to two stations. One was propaganda station and the other music. People liked music and they listened to this propaganda station. So little children heard this over and over and over and over. Jews were bad, bad, bad. Slavs were bad. You have to kill them. So forth. I can't help but think many of the school teachers today have been raised in a different culture. They teach it to our kids. They teach about how we took advantage of the Native Americans, and we did. Took advantage of black people that were slaves, and we did. And they take advantage of poor people compared to rich people, and we do. But in spite of those things, everybody wants to come to America. It's the land of opportunity. You have a chance, at least, to get above that. You can't just teach the bad things unless you also point out the advantages. And I think that we live in a society where it's more popular to talk about the bad things. That's why I'm willing to go back in the service. Put me on the side of a hill with a scope rifle. Even with my bad leg, I can still do it. See? Yeah, of course I can.
I'm not going to argue with them on that. And if you want to, do so at your own risk. Happy 98th birthday to Ed Bates, who hit that number November 3rd. And thanks to longtime listener Brian Weldon, who has long encouraged me to pay this unique World War II veteran a visit. So glad I did. Again, you can find photos, a short video, and a link to Ed Bates' book at hometownheroesradio.com. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time when we'll be reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.